This is pretty much Pop a Culture Podcast, a collection of misfits who couldn't hack it at the park. Today we're discussing the Apple TV show Slow Horses that started in 2022. It has just concluded its fifth season based on the novels by Mick Herron that began in 2010. Adapted by Will Smith, but not that one. This is Mark Linsenmeyer, king of my own little domain.
This is Al Baker, and I'll tell you one thing I've learned about podcasting. It's a strange game.
I'm Sarah Lynn Bruck, and I am totally knackered and chuffed watching this very British show on the telly like I had just stepped out of a petrol-fueled lorry, finding my way to my mates, navigating with my sat-nav, wearing my wellies, and after eating kippers and chips that cost about £3, then tossing them into the bin since they seemed a little dodgy. I tell you, this is a proper show, isn't it?
Holy shit. What the fuck was that?
What was the first thing you said?
We're not going to break that down line by line. Let's just respect it.
Oh my gosh.
I just genuinely couldn't pass the first two words.
That's all you need. I'm Sarah Lynn Brooke. Okay.
Let me just do my thing because mine is hella short and we can go back to breaking down. This is Lawrence Ware coming to you from Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, and I have a hole in my sock, but I'm the smartest guy in the room. Okay, I'm very straightforward. Very true.
So this was Al's suggestion, obviously.
Are you saying this because he's British and it's a British show?
I wasn't even the first person to suggest doing this. I think we've all been saying that we love this show for ages. And
yeah, get out of here with this, obviously. I watched Slow Horses from the beginning. Don't start with that.
All right, all right. And Sarah, you had...
That's racist, Mark.
You had also been doing this on your own time, Sarah, right? So this is not a...
100%. Yeah, no, we've been watching it since the beginning.
The downside of not having anybody who just like, I haven't been watching this, I have to catch up and watch all the seasons right away, is there's nobody who has all of it fresh. So...
Oh, no, I watched it all from the beginning over the last few days.
Okay, all right. See?
I love this show.
See, the British guy is the one... There you go. The British guy is the one who had to binge it. Us Americans have been watching it since the beginning.
I've also watched it from the beginning. I've seen it like 3 times all the way through now.
Wow.
I love this show.
And season 5, didn't love that one. But man, but I'm talking about since the beginning of the show for years now.
Yeah.
Al did that in a week. So thank you.
And in addition, you know, 5 seasons of TV was not enough for Al, that he has insisted that this is a spiritual sequel to the novels of Jean Le Carré. How do you pronounce it given that he's a...
Jean Le Carré.
Okay. I'm an English Frenchman.
Wait a second, Mark. Do you not know who that guy is? Are you serious? The spy who came in from the cold? Everybody's read those books.
Slow Horses is one of my favorite kinds of story, and it's the spy thriller in the tradition of John le Carré, as opposed to in the tradition of Ian Fleming and even Alfred Hitchcock, right? We're talking about a very there are action spy thrillers which are excellent and cerebral and like very worthwhile. I don't mean to be dismissive of Ian Fleming, even though you probably should be dismissive of Ian Fleming, but there's a very particular kind of spy thriller tone that John le Carré is widely considered the godfather of, even if not the originator of. And Slow Horses definitely seems to me to be running in that tradition. The TV show constantly name drops Le Carré and Le Carré characters and Le Carré situations, and it seems very, very keen that its audience knows that it's trying to follow in those footsteps. And it's really interesting that Gary Oldman is obviously the star of the show in more ways than one, and was recently also the standout performance in an extraordinary movie. Well, I say recently, it's like 15 years ago now, but the Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy movie. So we've got Gary Oldman steeped in that tradition. We've got the story steeped in that tradition lots of other ways. It's also just something that I really wanted to talk about as much as I want to just talk about Slow Horses. I think it's really interesting, positioned in the tradition of those more kind of beard strokey, cerebral, humanistic spy thrillers that John le Carré is the kind of foremost proponent of.
I think that makes sense for the show. You know, when we did Poker Face, that was, we said, you know what, this is just Columbo. And it was, the creators admitted that it's just a remake of a spiritual sequel to Columbo. So I watched some of that, which, you know, there's no reason that I would have seen any of that given when it came out and my age. Nobody had ever recommended Le Carré to me ever. I don't read generally spy thriller. I know there are many, many very, very popular authors in that area. I haven't even read a Grisham book. So, you know, there's just limits in terms of, I tend to sprinkle more into the, you know, Michael Crichton to the left of that, to the, into the fantasy sci-fi weird stuff area rather than these more realistic things. Certainly not this. Anyway, I experienced Call for the Dead, his first book, in preparation for this. And I guess, admittedly, according to literature, this is not, you know, the full flowering of his style. And it just seemed very continuous with Agatha Christie. You know, it happens to take place among spies, but it's the same kind of mystery. It's the same kind of style. It's the same kind of go back and ask questions a million times. And then I watched just last night and this morning that 2010 Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy. It was always one that was on my list.
Oh, you'd not seen it. Amazing.
I had not seen it. And certainly
me either.
It's wonderful seeing all those faces together, that, you know, that cast is so stacked.
Genuine best of British, right? It's just, and Kathy Burke, anyone who knows how to cast Kathy Burke is a winner.
I feel like it was aimed at people who had already read the book. I felt a similar, you know, when we just discussed in our last episode, the PTA, third to last movie based on the Pynchon book that have already inherent vice, that I felt like, not that it was a mess in the way Inherent Vice was, but that it gave me sort of hints of these things, but like not enough that I should really be able to guess which character is the bad one, or even tell them apart, even know which name goes with which face. Like, the pacing was similar to Slow Horses. I can see how it's connected. It was not the straightforward snafu. I guess there were certain things about it. Yeah, let's say what makes this the sort of anti-hero, I don't know, is that too strong to say? Definitely in the first Mick Herron book. So that's the other thing, is I listened to the audiobook of the first Slow Horses book, which is very, very similar to the show, but they actually, they're less heroic in the book. In the show, at the end of the first season, they run out and basically save the day. In the book, no, it is, really is like the guy saves himself with a rock. And then that's the end of it. So it's just everybody's kind of corrupt and fucked up and end of story. It seems like the show people did not feel like that would go over.
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I want to talk about that, but I want to hear what the other guys think about the show in general and your history with the genre.
I don't really kind of gravitate toward that genre. Often it takes itself a little bit too seriously. And one of the big draws for me to Slow Horses was that it doesn't take itself seriously. The characters are hilarious. And actually, like a half an hour ago, I just finished reading the first book. And I was laughing out loud at some of the lines that were coming out of Jackson Lamb's mouth. I mean, he just has just over and over and over again. I feel like every single conversation that he has, there is something in there that makes me laugh. But the book also went further into the character development, as books often do. And you really kind of understand where each one of them is coming from. So I think it was easier for the book to really present them in these unflattering ways because they were able to kind of dig into the well of why they were the way they were. But the show does a great job also of portraying them, you know, and giving us, I mean, that opening scene in the first episode of season one is just incredible. That is just incredible, incredible television. We fell in love with this show right from the get-go, and every single season we're excited to catch up on it once again.
Okay, I love the show. I'm a big Le Carre fan, so I've read probably all of his books. Maybe I may have missed one or two here and there, but The Spy Who Came In from the Cold is, of course, a classic one that I love. Constant Gardner, love that one. The Paler of Tanama, love that one. Our Kind of Traitor, A Most Wanted Man, Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy. I know those books. I know those movies. I love those things. And so to see this film, now I was not aware of the books before the show. Although once I started watching the show, I went back and read all the books. Loved them. I'm just a big fan of this show. I've always been a fan of the show. And I did not like, honestly, Gary Oldman in the first season, but he was kind of grown on me.
Really?
The farting, how rude he is, it just rubbed me the wrong way that first season. I don't know why. And maybe it's just because he's nothing really like I've seen before. Like, there are echoes of him in the Le Carre books, but not really like his kind of embodiment of how he does it. And so it just kind of rubbed me the wrong way, but I've grown to love him. My number one person is River. I love River. But the point, though, nevertheless, is that I really enjoy the show. I've watched the show for many, many years. I heard rumblings in the critical kind of community that this is a really good show. And I said, okay, let me put on one episode. Let me check it out. And from that point forward, I was all in. Now, last season, I didn't love that one that much. That one felt like a little bit of a misfire. But all the other seasons, I absolutely loved. And I'm going to disagree with Al because I think Fleming is good. And I do love a lot that Fleming did. And I particularly love the most recent James Bond films that are simultaneously action, but also weighty, cerebral, whatever. The Daniel Craig ones. But nevertheless, I'm a big guy for spy films, particularly British spy films, British spy shows. Like MI5, MI6. What show is that? What's the show?
Oh, I mean, they're both agencies. But we had one called Spooks, which I think was renamed to MI5 in the UK, in the US.
I think that was it. I think that's
because,
it.
Because that term gets lost in translation a bit.
Yeah, like, it would have been better to keep it called Spooks. But anyway, I really love British spy dramas. They have a different kind of feel than the American ones, because the American ones tend to be mostly all action, whereas with the British ones, they tend to be a little bit more cerebral, a little bit more methodical. So it's like, yeah, James Bond versus Mission Impossible, but Mission Impossible is like, they really don't care about the plot. Whereas with James Bond, they kind of try to, although with Spectre, they kind of drop the ball, but they try to care to. And so when it comes to this show is very much like the James Bond without the over-the-top action. And so I'm all in. So I really enjoyed these books. I enjoyed the show. I'm looking forward to where they're going to go. It's clearly very popular. And outside of Mark's cantankerous kind of response to the books in the show, everyone loves it. I mean, so, you know, I'm just telling you, like, it is a very popular show, and I'm really interested to see where the show goes forward.
I think we've established that you could sell this to somebody who's not ordinarily in love with spy stuff just as a comedy property, you know, at least if they're okay with British humor. Is that accurate?
It's a really funny show.
Is this show really British? Like, is it really British now? Because it's an American kind of thing. Is it very British?
Very British. So let's talk a bit more about the genealogies of the show. So you compared it a bit to James Bond. And while, you know, I love James Bond as much as the next guy, I think the key difference between Bond Mission Impossible style spy thrillers and Le Carre / Slow Horses kind of spy thrillers is that Bond action spy thrillers don't really have a lot to do with spying. They don't have a lot to do with the actual activity of espionage as it takes place now and has taken place currently. Spies don't do the kind of stuff that James Bond does. They just call him a spy because that's the kind of thing that people understand. Previous versions of the James Bond story would have been like a soldier or a pilot, like Dan Dare comics, something like that. It's just someone who has a job that you can kind of label in the action hero kind of space. Whereas shows like Slow Horses, movies like Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy are about the business of espionage and what that's like and what it says about, you know, politics and state power and humanity and all the rest of that stuff. So that for me is the key kind of difference. And I think shows that do that kind of have a British footprint on them anyway. It feels like very much our kind of thing. And I think that could just be because of the history of people like Graham Greene and Le Carre and others. But it also seems there's a kind of special place culturally that Britain had in the middle of the 20th century, like during the Cold War, which made us very apt to kind of birth this kind of literature. You know, we were post-colonial power. We were, you know, in hoc politically to the United States on all things. For the United States, it was a moment of great, like, optimism and jingoism. But in the UK, it was about, you know, imperial and industrial decline. So we were very, like, bitter and sardonic generally. There was a lot of sense of, like, the Cold War is clearly, you know, very important and something that we found ourselves in the middle of, but it wasn't clear. Like, one thing that runs through all of Le Carre's work is that the people involved are people who began working for the intelligence services during the Second World War when they were fighting Nazis. And it was very, very easy for them to get up in the morning and do the difficult thing because they knew exactly who their enemy was and why it was important that they were defeated. In the Cold War, everything is a lot less clear, a lot more murky. It still feels urgent, but is harder to kind of deal with uncritically. And that's the kind of core. And that also runs into Slow Horses. Right. In Slow Horses, you have a cast of characters, all of whom are, you know, ideologically very on side with defending liberal democracy against the things which threaten it. That's clearly what motivates them all. They all want to do a good job. They've also all got egos and problems and whatever they get in the way of that. But what's getting in the way of them doing that job is, in the Le Carre era, it would have been like the moral ambiguity of the Cold War. Now it's the failures of the British state more generally, the kind of political weaknesses of modern democracy, the kind of weaselly politicians, and in the eyes of the show, the kind of soft bureaucracies that are just getting in the way of, quote, real espionage work as embodied by Jackson Lamb. And to that extent, there's something really interestingly kind of conservative about the show and very like paleo outlook almost, because the hero of the show is the guy who, like, no one would want to be in charge of anything. But he's the hero of the show because he's standing up against this kind of wimpy, foppish bureaucracy. It's a really good, I think, ultimately great modernization of the same kind of genre of show, because it very eloquently switches out the thorns in the side of the intelligence community. It updates those very eloquently for a modern age.
That was great. It made me think of, I looked up the quote about Moscow rules versus London rules.
Yeah.
They said Moscow rules meant watch your back. London rules meant cover your arse.
Let's stop for just a second and talk about our sponsors.
Billion-dollar brands don't just happen. From skincare to shapewear, Kim Kardashian created her own rules of business. And now, for the first time, she's teaching exactly how she did it. In her new class on Masterclass, Kim reveals the methods and mindset that built her empire. You don't have to be famous to learn from her. You just need the drive to create success on your own terms. In this class, you'll learn how to build a brand people can't stop talking about. Use your story as strategy. You are the product. Make your visibility part of the value. Define yourself first. If you don't set the narrative, someone else will. You'll find out how to price your worth, protect your value, and ask for what you deserve. How to turn mistakes into marketing and keep control of your story when things go wrong. Why reinvention isn't risky, it's required. Kim shows you how to evolve and stay relevant no matter what. The new rules of business, the 10 Kim Mandments, is available exclusively on Masterclass. Masterclass always has great offers during the holidays, sometimes as much as 50% off. Head over to masterclass.com/pretty for the current offer. That's up to 50% off at masterclass.com/pretty. masterclass.com/pretty.
Why not get Surfshark VPN for your loved one for a holiday gift? Let me tell you why your loved one needs a VPN, a virtual private network. A VPN hides the location of someone using a computer or other electronic device, so that the sites that are being visited, so that the government, so that the internet service provider does not know where and therefore who is doing the web browsing. Do you want all these entities to have the personal information and browsing history of your loved one? I think not. Perhaps more importantly, a VPN encrypts all the data, all the credit card numbers, all the passwords that are flying from your computer, from your phone to these various websites. You don't want all the companies and the bad people that are breaking in and recording the traffic, say, on a public Wi-Fi network, which does happen. You don't want all those people to have your loved one's very private data, do you? I think not. Now, the Surfshark VPN in particular is one you should try. First, because they have over 3,000 servers in 100 countries. A single license gets you access to the service from all of your devices. And they have 24/7 customer support. And Surfshark offers additional services like Surfshark Alternative ID that generates fake digital identities and disposable emails, forwarding messages from these to your real inbox to protect that inbox from spam and breaches when signing up for online services. So sign up for Surfshark using their risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. Secure your privacy with Surfshark. Go to surfshark.com/PMP for 4 extra months of Surfshark. If you can't remember that URL, just check the show notes. We've certainly been prepared for this by streaming services for a while. The number of Sherlock and Broadchurch and Happy Valley and Luther and all these things that have been very, very popular over here have made us okay with this. And a lot of those also have morally compromised or a mixture of upsetting drama and light moments. I probably watched more of those than I watched American cop shows, which I find kind of boring at this point. I can't think of one. I've been watching High Potential recently, just as a family thing. But that's in the category of wacky sidekick fantasy cop shows, not like something that's actually like The Shield that's showing you the underbelly.
I mean, Slow Horses isn't a procedural. This is something else that I think the show does, the show is incredibly smart about. And that's, they don't try for multi-season arcs. Every season is a nice short 6-episode miniseries in its own right. The best thing about that is if something doesn't work about one season, you don't have to worry about trying to pay it off the next season. You can just bin it, start again. And they do that a few times with the cast. I can't remember exactly who swaps in and out where in the books, but like they've got a lot of leeway to focus more on people that are working, cut focus on stuff that isn't, change up the tone. You know, you can bring Hugo Weaving in for a for a weird like stint and try and turn it into a Jason Bourne franchise. And when that doesn't work, you can go back to doing what you do best. It's a really smart way of making a TV show. And it also means they've been able to do 5 seasons in 3 years, which is incredible.
Yeah, it is incredible. Lawrence, since you've read all the books, does the show follow the books pretty accurately or?
The first season, yes. The latter seasons, less so. There is a little bit more of a multi-book arc that the show kind of dispenses with and does away with. But for the most part, yes. Like the stories, like the tension and the conflict in the stories, that's pretty much straight out the book. But as far as the interaction of the characters and like, Al said there's not much of a multi-season arc, but there kind of is with the characters. Like Gary Oldman's character starts one way and you kind of begin to see more and more of why he is the way he is. So that's a little bit of an arc. And he just mentioned it. So the Hugo Weaving thing, I probably shouldn't say what's going on, but anyway, the Hugo Weaving thing, that's a little bit of a multi-season arc thing, but it's not really. Anyway, so there's a little bit of that, but the show is pretty good at kind of dispensing with all the stuff that kind of doesn't work. Because there are books, honestly, I like the books, but I don't love the books. I love the show far more than I like the books. And so the show does a really good job of taking what really works from the books. Like in series 5, it test drives something that I kind of didn't like. But other than that, it does a really good job of taking the stuff that works in the books and dispensing with the stuff that doesn't work from the books. And that's really smart, I think. And this Will Smith guy, I don't know anything about this. Do you guys know who this person is? Because I was not aware, and Al did this kind of British smile thing that he does. So he knows something about him, apparently. But I don't know who this guy was, because whoever he is, he's very good. Al, who is this guy?
Yeah, he was a comedian. So I saw his name in the credits. I was like, oh, is it the same guy? Yeah, he was a comedian who came up in the early 2000s and did a great radio show that I was a big fan of called The Tao of Bergerac, where he explored Eastern philosophy through a 70s British detective show that he enjoyed. He worked with Amanda Iannucci on The Thick of It, which is also the place where the people who made Veep and later on Succession kind of got their start. It makes me think that Amanda Iannucci and shows like The Thick of It and John Oliver is another guy who came up in that kind of crowd. It feels like the beginning of a new subtle British comedy writers invasion, because they've all come out with absolute bangers recently.
He's good. He's really good.
Is he leaving the show? Isn't there somebody who's come in for starting season 7 or something?
He wasn't writing as many episodes in the last couple of seasons, so maybe he's... But he did like every single script for the first 3, which is probably too much.
That's a lot.
Work for one person to do.
That's a lot of work. Those are the best series, I think.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. It is worth saying the first 3 are really top notch, and it does start to lose its way a little bit. Although there are things in the later seasons that I like a lot. Like they do particularly start treating River Cartwright with the contempt he deserves in the later seasons. In the first couple, they're still holding on to him as like maybe he's the character we need the audience to like, so they'll stay with us. But I like it better when he becomes properly despicable.
So season 4 is the one with the plane?
Season 2 is the one with the plane.
Oh, all right. So this is what I said about the advantages of like binging them all or rewatching them all if you have time before, is because I, even when I read the first book, I was like, oh, this is combining things from the first and second season, because I didn't remember the whole snafu among the team aspect as being the same season as the Pakistani guy gets kidnapped plot. I thought that was like season 2, because they introduce it a little later in the show, maybe, you know, an episode later, as opposed to right at the beginning, the way it is in the book. And no, those things are all together. Yeah, I have some kind of faint memories. I wasn't going to be curmudgeonly about this, but Lawrence, you've pushed me into this role.
Be who you are, Mark. Be who you are. Let it go.
I feel like this might be a little light and forgettable. Like, I really liked the first book. It worked well as a little jigsaw puzzle. And I think the show does as good a job as could possibly be done with these books, as far as I can tell. But, you know, the fact that I don't clearly remember what happened in these seasons 2 through 4 maybe just means, you know, might just say something about me, but maybe it means this was not the most profound television experience. You know, Succession, I feel like I could piece together. There are plenty of shows that, you know, Breaking Bad, I could, without too much prompting, sort of lay out what happened in each season in the maiden arcs. And this one, at least, it seemed like it was just breezy, which is not bad. That's a fine viewing experience.
I think that's right. And the show is really pulpy in a lot of respects. Like, it does, as Sarah said, it doesn't take itself too seriously. A lot of the plots are a bit silly, and some of them have holes that don't survive very close scrutiny. But, yeah, I mean, you bring up Succession. I don't remember all the ins and outs of the plot of Succession either, but what I remember are the characters. And I think in the case of Slow Horses, you have a series of characters and performances that really, really elevate the show. Like, there's a version of this show which is just entirely forgettable, and that version doesn't have Gary Oldman or Kirsten Scott Thomas in it.
Sure.
I mean, the casting is really spectacular because they really have good. Like, they've got a bunch of really good, solid, mostly unknown ensemble cast, and then these like two or three absolute stars to really hold the thing together, and it works. And anytime Gary Oldman has a moment on screen, I mean, those series 5, he finally gets his big speech where he gets to lay out his tragic backstory while pretending that's not what he's doing. And that scene is absolute masterclass of TV writing, acting.
That's a great scene.
Everything about it is superb. And you can see another version of the show where nothing like that happens, but it's still recognizably the same show. But because you've got Gary Oldman and you can write for Gary Oldman and you can get that kind of scene, it really elevates it into something special, I think.
The show isn't afraid of getting rid of main characters too, which kind of, as a viewer, at least for me, it keeps me on my toes. And for characters that you especially care about, they will give them Alzheimer's. They will kill them off on a biking accident. They'll do, you know, they will surprise
accident.
You.
Accident.
Yeah.
Accident, Sarah.
Accident in air quotes. But anyway, they do, they keep the viewer on their toes, and I guess the reader too, if there's, you know, some similar plot points going on, which I'm assuming there are. But I appreciate that. I love knowing that no one in this universe is safe, and that definitely keeps me coming back.
Al and I have such a weird relationship because Al and I disagree so often, but at the same time, I really find Al's points to be quite profound consistently.
I'm a profound guy.
It's a wonderful podcast relationship we have going on there. I think Al just pinpointed to me why I love the show so much more than the books, because Mark is right that the plotting is very breezy, not very memorable, but when you're in it, you're in it. But as far as looking back on it, you're not going to be up at 3 o'clock in the morning sipping a brandy, you know, and also have a cigar and be like, you know what? I was thinking about the second series of Slow Horses and I thought about something that made me think about the meaning of life. Like, that's not going to happen with this show. But the reason why I love this show so much is because of the acting. Because legitimately, there is no one who is a weak link in this cast.
Yeah, like, accurate.
Because, like, you guys can jump on Gary Oldman and all kind of stuff, and they're good. You know, Kristen Scott Thomas, good. But for me, what I really enjoy are, and I can't say her last name, but her first name is Sophie. Al knows who I was talking about. She's a very famous actress. She's really good. Jack Loudon is really good. Christopher Chung is really good. Like, everyone's really good in the show. And the acting elevates the material, because if it had been just us doing the acting, it would have been a terrible show, right? But because you have these star-class, really good actors really bringing, like, they're not taking days off. They're really bringing it on this show. It elevates material that otherwise would have been completely forgettable, right? That's why I love the show so much. It's because the acting is so good. The comedic beats are so good. Like, it makes so much sense that a comedian is behind the show, because there's so much comedy, and it's not over-the-top comedy, but it is like, I'm chuckling for 5 minutes off of what just happened kind of comedy. So, like, it really comes together and works very, very well. And the acting does a really good job of having the right comedic beats, the right kind of intrigue. Are they good people? Are they not good people? But at the same time, you still like them, even if they're good or they're bad. The Alzheimer kind of storyline really works for me. I think that Al pinpointed, well, that's what it is. I was trying to figure out why I liked the show so much, and I couldn't figure it out because Mark is right that the plotting is not great. It's good, but it's not great. It's the acting. The acting is so much better than it deserves to be. That's what it is, Al. You pinpointed it perfectly.
The show's just very clever about a lot of stuff it does. So the fact that it's 6 episodes means a breezy plot can carry it.
Very smart. You're in and out. You're in and out, yeah.
If that had to support like a 24-episode season of TV, there would be dead weight all over the place. Yeah.
Or even 8 episodes. I used to think that 8 episodes was like easy in and out.
Would be too many.
But like 6 is perfect. You're right about that. Because I didn't like the last series, although that one speech you said was really good. I didn't like the last series, but it wasn't a big commitment. It's 6 hours. You're in and out.
Yeah, here's looking at you, 24, that I've actually started to watch some of the seasons of that I had never seen before. But it is a slog for,
It is a slog.
Very similar kinds of plots.
In the moment, it was so good, though. In the moment, back 10 years, 20 years ago, it was so good, though.
Back when we all needed a post-9/11 revenge fantasy, it was great.
Our tastes have changed since then, but in the moment, man, God, I still remember like when it went to commercial break, but I still remember to this day.
We should really give props to the director and the camera work, because it's also a really interesting show to watch. It keeps your eyes very busy. The scenes are all set up in a really interesting way. And something that you don't really notice until it's not there is that the show is directed well for comedy too. A lot of the jokes are visual and the scenes are set up very well to pay off the jokes. And that's not something you can take for granted.
There's always a thing, speaking of the casting, where, of course, everybody on TV is prettier than they should be. And I like that in the last season, I doubt this was in the book, you can tell me, they acknowledged, because the whole thing is like somebody is dating the Christopher Chung character, Roddy Ho, and he's just supposed to be so unpleasant. His personality is supposed to be so unpleasant that, you know, this is completely unbelievable. And one of the other female characters is like, well, you know, if you just ignore his personality, he is super hot. So, you know, use him as a fuck boy, as they say, that would be fine. And, you know, it seems like that is just a concession to, yeah, we had to cast this person. And like all sort of geeks in TV, it's like has to be just some hot person who has, glasses of some sort. So character glasses to make them less attractive.
That's not in the book. That's definitely a TV thing.
Yeah, and I read somewhere that Christopher Chung in his spare time is a personal trainer. So he's in very good shape in addition.
Of course you would notice that, Sarah.
Of course I would. Yes.
The boy candy. I see what you're doing, man.
In addition to making them a little more heroic, I think they make them show a little more affection to each other in the show. Maybe this happens in the book, and this rewards you too. But like,
I saw no
sign of it. You know that when the Gary Oldman character, you know, dismisses you're just a bunch of fuck ups, but you know is he just doing this as a sort of psychological thing to sort of in that he wants them to go out and solve the crime as opposed to. So one of the mysteries in the end of the first season and show is, you know why most people ended up in the slow horses, but you don't know why Gary Oldman ended up there. You don't know why Roddy Ho ended up there. The Gary Oldman one, I think they don't reveal until maybe season 2, some of that information. But the narrator in the book just drops it on you and just says, look, Roddy Ho's there because nobody liked him. And that's it. And in this one, in the show, they have that River knows this. And Roddy Ho's sort of negotiating with him. Can you tell? And he lies to him. It's like, oh, they were just jealous of you. You were too good. And lets him, you know, this character that we're not supposed to like, and that River does not like, have this nice moment that seems undeserved in a certain way. It's not a complaint. It's just a different choice.
Well, it's also in the show, it's a visual medium. So in a book, you get to understand, for example, why Jackson Lamb has been kind of protecting Catherine Standish, what happened with her boss, and that whole backstory, which would have been in the show, I think, kind of nice to know. And it was really touching in the book, the fact that he was really kind of protective of her. And you can see that in the show, but they have to kind of show those things in a more visual way. And you can see that he is protective of her in the television show. But I love the fact that in the book, we really get that backstory. In fact, when I first watched the first season, I thought maybe she was widowed or something, that that's what they were talking about. But it was only after I actually sat down with the book that I realized they were talking about her previous boss and where that she was sort of the money penny character, you know, to his James Bond, basically.
Are there other things, again, sort of book versus show or the evolution of the show for those that have experienced more of it? And we can get to the recent season, but I don't want to skip over the ones in the middle just because I don't remember them very clearly. I know they tell more about in the book, in the first book, about Rivers and his mother, like what his situation is with. And that is the, you know, as far as a character thing and this Alzheimer's thing that we've been talking about is his grandfather is like an ongoing thing, which I'm not sure how I felt about the way that it was dealt with in the most recent season in the like confused grandfather calling to divulge crucial information, which then he sort of stumbles because he can't remember in the middle, but they sort of receive it or maybe they don't receive it. You know, it seems a little ham-handed.
Yeah, it was a little ham-handed. But I do love that relationship. I love that relationship between River and his grandfather.
It's a very interesting relationship. And I actually think the show does a good job of exploring, because people, I haven't had this experience, but people who've had parents or loved ones kind of go through Alzheimer's, they do a pretty decent job of kind of exploring that. I really kind of appreciated that. And yeah, it's kind of ham-fisted, and yeah, it's spy adjacent and blah, blah, blah. But still, at the core of it, their relationship is really kind of sweet, and there's clearly some affection that River has for him. I thought that was a little bit of some depth there in the show that I kind of appreciated.
It's kind of, it's treated sensitively, but ultimately it's there for plot purposes, because you got to have the great scare where it seemed like he'd accidentally shot River in the face, and they're already setting up the Alzheimer's is making him kind of half remember things unclearly, and there are still some big, you know, conspiracies to be resolved, and I'm sure that his memory will play a big part in that.
Definitely, but still, even though it's definitely a plot point, they still treat it with tenderness, and I kind of appreciated it.
Have there been any actual full-on flashbacks? Like, I figured maybe there was a little bit sort of in, like, River remembering things about his childhood, but in terms of, like, revealing, right, we can't have Gary Oldman's character actually evolve in the present too much, but we can reveal more of the backstory. And, of course, there have been flashbacks to, like, 3 years ago or whatever when the thing with the boss gets resolved, the previous control. But, you know, it seems like we don't get a whole, like, here's, now we're going to go to the, we're going to go to the 80s for just a little bit or something. That has not happened, right?
No, and it may do, because we did get the flashback to the, you know, bathtub moment.
Yes, and River's childhood and him getting saved, his mother getting saved from...
One of the things that this kind of genre of story does very well is, like, bear the weight of the past in the present, if you like. So it's really fitting to have us explore like the current state of Jackson Lamb, and one of the most important things that this series of stories is about is like how did this man become to be like this and how is he tolerated. And one of the most thrilling bits in the first couple of seasons is when you realize that he is lazy, but he's also incredibly good at every element of his job when he decides to care.
Very smart.
And one of the interesting things about the show and the story and the character is what drives him to get up off his ass and do something. And always it's the well-being of his team. And like by the end of the series, after you understand a bit more of his backstory, you start to wonder if maybe, you know, the philosophy of Slough House, as in don't do anything if you can possibly help it, is ultimately about keeping his people safe, because he knows that like the less they do, the less danger they're going to be in.
This show is kind of a lesson in really economical storytelling, because too much info dumpy backstory just slows everything down. And that's not what this series is about. It's quick, it's plotty. And if you end up convoluting it with a bunch of backstory that's not really necessary for the story present, you're just going to slow everything down and you're going to turn people off. So I actually really appreciate that they only give us little snippets when we need it. And they often do it in the story present so that we're not going back necessarily to somebody's childhood, for example, to see what their trauma is, to find out who they are. We've learned that that actually is not necessary to tell the story really well, which I, as a storyteller, really appreciate.
What about the level of mystery or absence thereof, right? The Le Carre ones, you can tell me, it seems like the investigators trying to find something out, and we follow the investigator and we find it out as the investigator finds it out. It might not be as Agatha Christie as the first one that I had read, but certainly it seems like you don't just cut to the bad guys working. But yet it seems like in Slow Horses, they do that. And in fact, they did it more in the first season with the terrorists than in the book. That mostly it's from the point of view. In fact, they even give the guy who's kidnapped more backstory on the show, like show him at his comedy club and stuff. Like, whereas in the book, they just sort of mention, like, this is an interest of his. Not that he, you know, that he has a great history in this. And you spend time with them, but then there's still things that are revealed, right? Okay, somebody among the terrorists is a mole. So we sort of find out these things as the plot moves along. And it seems like that is sort of the rule that, again, in the most recent season, we see a lot of the bad guys doing their plotting. Like, we don't know what their ultimate plan is. Like, so that's a thing to find out. But it seems like it's only about 20% mystery. It's mostly just show the stuff as it happens.
I think this mostly comes from the show just being a bit more modern and leaning a bit more heavily on the action side. And it just wants to bring the audience with it a little bit more than the traditional Akira stuff. When you were talking about your experience of watching Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, it was very, very familiar to me. I don't think I've ever followed the plot of a Akira story or film properly the first time through.
It usually takes me 3 times. Yeah, it's a long time before you kind of figure it out.
Precisely as you said, because you need to be able to clearly hold in your mind who these different people are, and the stories do not hold your hand through that process at all.
Well, you're going to name one of the characters Toby when Toby Jones, the actor, plays his friend, a different character, like stuff like that. Like, you know, just stuff you got to get.
I know. I mean, yeah, because obviously some of the audience are just very, very, you know, deeply stupid people and can't tell actors from their characters.
Holy shit. Whoa, shots fired. Oh my goodness.
All those Brits look alike to me.
Yeah, exactly. So Slow Horses isn't making life that difficult. Throwing back to Andor, which we saw recently, that is kind of more in that vein. Like, Andor is, you know, doesn't want to hold anybody's hand, and that's more of a kind of Lacare thing.
Andor is actually very much a Lacare kind of story in space. I never thought about it like that, but it very much is.
The Lacare stories are much more a mystery being unraveled and coming together, like, a lot of the time. There's always a twist. So you started with Call for the Dead, and that's absolutely the wrong place to start. Sorry about that, because you're right. It's just a murder mystery story where the detective is a spy, and that's not what the later Lacare stories are about usually at all. It's unraveling of intrigue and exploration of the personal cost involved in that intrigue is this kind of stock in trade. So you will very, very slowly reveal a mystery will come together, the intentions behind the people who set the mystery in motion will come together, and at their best there's an incredibly satisfying twist that will, you know, undermine your whole understanding of the story so far. All those things are there in Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, but you have to watch it a couple of times to get them.
I will defend my chronological approach just because I got to know who Smiley is, the main character. First book, here's his history. Here's how he got this way. Okay, now I went into Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy knowing who Gary Oldman's character was in a way that I would have just not known at all.
But I think Mick Herron's doing in Slow Horses, which is different, and which is probably why we fall in love with the characters more in this series, is because often the audience knows a little bit more than some of the characters do. Like, we can be one step ahead of certain characters after we've learned something, after we've been looking over the shoulder of Jackson Lamb, and then we go over to Catherine Standish's character and we know something that she doesn't know. And then we come back to River and we know something that he doesn't know. And, you know, sure, there are things that Mick Herron leaves out for us and for us to learn later. But I think part of that is that it gives us those stakes. We are now have a stake in how these characters are going to behave, and we're glommed on to exactly what they're going to be doing based on the information that we know that they may not know.
So I guess it's a recommend.
All right.
I mean, from everybody but you, Mark. It's absolutely a recommend.
It's a strong recommend.
It's a good show.
Absolutely the strongest thing, this is not a profound statement, is things based on books have to actually have a plot and have direction and be going somewhere. And we all learned that in a very painful way from Game of Thrones. that when they ran out of books, I guess let's just wrap it up however we can. It seems like there are more books to get through, and this will stop when the books stop.
It better stop when the books stop.
Are we going to say from the world of slow horses? You know, we're going to get spin-off shows.
This is not that kind of thing. I don't think they'll do that kind of stuff.
Well, Gary Oldman has publicly said that he will play this character. He will play Jackson Lamb as long as people will let him play him, which is great.
Yeah, he should be allowed to. He's fully got full National Treasure potential as Jackson Lamb.
He's really good. Mm. I mean, honestly, Gary Oldman, do we really appreciate that guy? Like, he is so incredibly good.
In my house, we appreciate Gary Oldman.
I think people know that, Lawrence.
No, I'm telling you, man, like, the first time I saw Gary Oldman, oh my gosh, what was it? It was like a 90s movie, and he was playing like a drug dealer, and I had no idea, and he had like a
Which
black
drug dealer? FX. He's played a lot of baddies.
But it was the one with it had Brad Pitt in it, Christian Slater.
Tarantino wrote it.
Yeah, directed by Tony Scott. I forgot the name of the movie. Sarah's going to find it for me.
I'm looking at it.
He plays like a black adjacent. He has like dreads in it. He's like so weird. And you would never know that guy is from England. He is like a top-notch tea-drinking, biscuit-ass England guy. I'm so impressed with Gary Oldman. Like, I don't know what he can't do.
True Romance is the one where he had the dreads.
That's the movie.
Yeah. I thought you were talking about him in The Professional, which that's the one where he's like inhaling drugs in a very dramatic way.
No, not that one. Not that one. But the thing is, like, one thing he can't do is stay married. That dude's been married I don't know how many times. It had so many partners. Like, he sucks at that. But as far as acting,
or he's really good at it.
He's good. Oh yeah, maybe that's what it is. But no matter what, like, that dude is really good. He's a great actor. He is really one of our treasures, man. He is so good. I don't know if people appreciate him as much as they should.
Yeah, no, he's amazing. Like, the one thing that stands out about him is he refuses to acknowledge how good he is. If you ever see him talk about his own work, he's one of those guys who would like, he will never accept that he did a good job in anything that he's done.
Because this show would not work without him. Like, it has to have him as the fulcrum. Mm-hmm. And he does such a wonderful job of bringing so much life to this show. I could not rave about him enough. I was so impressed with him.
I don't know if I remember Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead as being the best film ever, but I do remember that Gary Oldman and Tim Roth should just be forced to be in things together. That they are sort of equally weighty British presences, I feel.
It's a terrific stage play that I think any filmmaker would struggle to adapt for the screen. I don't think it's anybody's fault that the film version of that wasn't great.
Anything else in terms of expanding this or future whatever, anything like that?
Final thought, I think I've detected a growing interest in this genre of spy thriller as we begin to enter maybe a more interesting phase of historical geopolitics. I don't know if this is just my imagination, but it does seem like there have been a kind of upsurge in more politically minded thrillers, at least in terms of TV shows. I think Slow Horses is the best example of that recently, but I think we're going to see a lot more of it.
Lawrence, you had some critical things to say about the recent season. I thought it stuck the landing pretty well. I, you know, like the Battlestar Galactica guy and his, I don't want to give away the end of it, but the way things turned out with that little unbelievable, you know, you have to do certain things, like if River is going to stay on the show, for instance.
Well, no. My criticism was not with this season. It was with last season.
Oh, okay.
Last season was the one that I didn't love. This season I was fine with. It was the last season that kind of felt like he kind of lost his way a little bit.
Yeah. So that was the one exploring River's background.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I clearly was something that was planned from the beginning.
It's just a little bit too dumb for me that, like, that River was bred as a part of Hugo Weaving's eugenics personal eugenics program to be a super soldier.
Okay, you're spoiling too much. Right. But the problem, I think, honestly, like, I think you guys pinpointed what the problem was for me, because the first three seasons were all Will Smith. That season was the one where people other than Will Smith was doing things. That might have been the drop off for me. That might have been where it lost me.
They should have just gotten the other Will Smith to start doing it, and then nobody would know the difference.
Well, he was too busy slapping Chris Rock, so he didn't have time to do this.
Put himself in as the star. We're going to rewrite the book slightly. We're going to introduce this new character who comes in and solves everything.
Yeah, he's going to be Jensen Lamb, except he's not going to be stinky or smelly or like or cursed at all.
Cause... Nor is he going to be British. He's going to be a black person from Philadelphia.
Cheesesteaks for everybody.
That seems a good sentiment to end on. Thanks, everybody, for hanging out.
Thank you, guys. See you soon.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye, guys. Bye, guys.
Pretty Much Pop is part of the Partially Examined Life podcast network. Get more Pretty Much Pop at prettymuchpop.com. Get bonus content for every episode at patreon.com/prettymuchpop.